Hello, and welcome to the Inside EVs podcast for April the 29th, 2022. This is episode number 108. On today's show, we'll be talking about driving the Toyota BZ4X, attending the fully charged live event, and the launch of the Ford F-150 Lightning. I'm Dominic Ioni, Inside EVs forum moderator and Inside EVs editor. Joining us today is the meandering Mr. Martin Lee from the recently revamped EV News Daily podcast, which is available on all the best podcast platforms. And of course, Kyle Connor joins us from the majestic, practically palatial halls of Autospec Studios, or from where they're producing hot, always fresh videos for a growing number of YouTube channels. And we're very pleased to be joined this week by Lacey of the Misco Electric YouTube channel. So Tom Malogny can't be with us this week. He is on his way back from driving the Lexus RZ450E in Spain. But he says hello. And let's see. He shared this photo. Just to let you all know that he's not slacking off or anything. He's actually over there doing his thing. And we'll hear about this all next week. So before we get going, I'd like to ask that you please subscribe to the channel. If you're watching us on YouTube, please hit that thumbs up button and ring that bell icon for notifications. If you're watching us on Twitch, you can also ring that bell icon for notifications. All right. So with that out of the way, welcome everybody. So we'll talk about what we've been driving this week in a bit. But first, I want Martin to talk about the fully charged live event in Farnborough he's attending right now. His connection is kind of iffy sometimes, so we'll do this as long as we can. And he's standing in front. We'll let him tell us in a second here. But for those who don't know, Fully Charged is a YouTube channel that covers electric vehicles and associated technology, started and managed by Robert Llewellyn, who is an actor. He was in the sci-fi comedy Red Dwarf in Britain, and later the Scrap Heap Challenge. So Robert has been talking about electric cars and making videos for just about 12 years now. So it's a long, well-established channel. And now they're doing these live events. We have one coming up in the U.S. this year. It's going to be in San Diego in September. So Martin, want to tell us what's happening there right now and what kind of vehicles are showing off?
Sure thing. And if the signal goes again, because we're at an airfield surrounded by private jets, which is fine, then it's a bit of a crazy signal. So I can kind of hear every third word that you say. When the signal goes, just let me know and I can dive off and you can do the podcast as normal. But I'll swing you around because, you know, most importantly, we just need to keep Kyle happy, because if he doesn't get his fix of Citroën Ami, 100% electric with the roof bars on this. I know that Kyle gets withdrawal symptoms before I can buy one and ship one to the US to keep him happy. But look at this crazy paint job they've done on this one. But you never know whether you're looking at the front or the back, because let's face it, it's exactly the same. It's exactly how you've seen it. You've seen it before, but on display on the Citroën stand. But yeah, very, very, very cool.
Martin, that's the full Colorado spec with the roof bars, the good wheels.
Yeah, rusty.
I really want to get the chunky one, you know, the off-road one that they debuted with no doors. It's an amazing, thoroughbred, true racing machine. You need to be qualified to handle this level of power. So, you know, just, you know, be sure if you ever do drive one, it's, you know, be really tame with it, because it can bite you.
Oh, it has a glass roof. I never realized that before.
Glass roof. You can see it's got the best viewpoint of everything in the world. It's got the shifter down low for better weight distribution. It's perfect.
it's got a handbrake. It's got two pedals. And look, it's got some sort of heater. I mean, apart from that,
USB?
Not too much. Cut out seats, because, you know, weight saving and all that. So, it's a beast. Oh, and self-closing doors, by the look of it. it just shut itself. That's here. I'll try and move around with my terrible, terrible signal. So there's Vauxhall Citroën, VW are over here. This isn't the VW stand, by the way, in case you think it looks a bit small for an OEM. This is the VW test drive area. So you can come over here to their kind of secondary area, book a time, and you can take out ID4, GTX, ID3, ID5. They've got all their cars lined up over here. Take one out, try one, because as we all know, the best way to understand an EV is to drive one. And so they've got, but all the OEMs are here with all their cars lined up. So you just take them out, go and have a little play, and see what electric is all about. And look at this. You've never seen this before at a car show. This is the lesser spotted Tesla. Not a fan group, not an owner's club. This is, they exist, guys.
Right.
Look, they've hired themselves a, by the look of it, some sort of burger van. And they actually exist. The Tesla have turned up to a thing, with a rainbow wrapped Model 3 and a right hand drive Model Y, which is cool. So it's nice when they turn up and do stuff, because, yeah, you know, everyone else does. So I've never ever, and I joke. I know I joke and jest and poke and prod fun at them, but they just don't do anything that's part of the community. They do. They walk their own course, and so it's very strange to see the Tesla. Although I don't know if anyone from Tesla America watches this, I'm sure Elon Musk doesn't. It doesn't look very showbiz compared to everyone else's, and they're kind of stuck out in the car park. The MG test drive center, the Kia test drives, and as you go off into the distance, which I think is when I go over there, the signal goes a lot worse. Is all the kind of main stands. Of everyone, I can't think of anyone that's not here. Renault are not here because I don't know why. But everybody else is here. Kia have their EV6 on show, MG. And this is a used group, or used cars. And so they've turned up to promote, you know, their dealer chain. But yes, we have the EV6. And the new Niro EV, not e-Niro anymore. They're very insistent on that, they tell me. Niro EV, that's nice. How it should be called. Polestar are here doing just very Scandi things, because, look, it's just, isn't it lovely? Everything Polestar does just looks lovely. That's nice. So the Polestar 2 is here, and then all the Polestar 2s are over there. So you can take one out and go and have a play in the distance. A load of Arias are over here from Nissan. So you can't buy one yet, but you can test drive one, which is interesting. We have just some more cars over here to get in and to discover. And then another big test drive area over here. So you can see the Nissan tent. You've got Ford, you've got a lot of Mustang Mach-Es here. Hyundai here with a ton of Ioniq 5s. Roped all the dealers in, I think. They've got a load of them here. And then some German sausage, because everybody loves German sausage. So I think if I walk further over there, it's where the signal will go. So I'll walk and talk, and if it does, just bin me off, and I'll see you guys next.
Oh, it's
next
already
week.
Going,
Martin. So yeah, there's the Polestar 2 on display. Oh, the signal's already going. No.
We can hear you. We can still hear a little bit. So how many cars do you think they have over there? Is like dozens and dozens?
Yeah, I can't think of any that are not here, to be honest with you, at this huge site. So Renault are not here, and actually some of the other Volkswagen Group cars. I've not found a Cupra Born yet. See the VW over there, but I've not found. There's Skoda are here, and they're doing all the test drives, and there's some ENIACs, but I've not found like the main Skoda stands. So yeah, there's a few things. Over there, again, I think my signal will go, but in the distance, we've got some companies doing funky things with charging. Like that shipping container there, literally is a shipping container with six fast chargers on the side of it, and it's just stacked full of batteries. And they can literally pick it up, put it on the back of a standard lorry that takes shipping containers, and take it anywhere. So they're catering to things like sporting events, and even events like this, where you go somewhere that you want a ton of power. And it can connect into a mains connection onto the grid, so it can sort of charge and discharge at the same time. So that's all very interesting. And then inside, this is Farnborough Airport, there's a whole nother section indoors, which is chargers It is all the energy companies, the electricity companies are here, solar. I mean, there's just a ton of charger stands in there, for instance. And so it's really interesting. I've been coming to these events. This is probably the fourth year. This is double. This is double on last year. And last year would have been doubled on the year before. I think this is the fourth fully charged that I've done. It just gets bigger and bigger. It's a festival atmosphere now. And I'm really interested with these kind of events, because I wonder how many people here are sold. They're sold on the mission. Like, they love electric cars, and they're coming here to reinforce their decisions and just to go and hang out with like-minded people. And how many people are generally curious or even skeptics? Because that's going to be the story of this decade. It's going to be people who don't want to go electric, who we need to talk to and tell that story to about why it's not the devil, you know, and actually electric is okay. They've got a lot of classic car stuff here as well, from companies that take out the engine of whatever and put in some, there's some BMWs, there's a DeLorean, there's a great beach buggy, loads of classic car stuff here. And then a commercial section over in the distance as well. I'm not sure you can see any of that if I turn you around. That's where my signal definitely does go over there. But a whole truck section. So, you know, commercial vehicles, Volta trucks and things like that. Arrival aren't here, but many of those truck companies are here talking to their customers. And then over the other side in the distance, they've got a whole two-wheeled section. So they've got an outdoor and an indoor test track. So if you want to take out an e-bike, a scooter, e-trikes, what are the mono wheel things? What are they called? The balance things that I always fall off of.
One wheel.
Just a ton of stuff. So the key to these events is to get people experiencing electric power of whatever it is, whether it's e-mobility, whether it's your favorite car, your favorite brand, or you want to find out about used cars like these guys sell. So it does come to six locations next year. I think, as you say, San Diego in the US, I think it comes to Vancouver next year, locations across Europe as well. It's amazing what started as a YouTube channel 10 years ago has grown into this huge advocacy opportunity to tell the story of electric cars.
Well, that's great. Thank you very much for sharing that with us this morning, Martin. Appreciate it. So I don't know if you want to hang out with us or if you can find a spot where you have a good signal so you can join into a regular conversation with us. I'm not sure if you can hear me.
I'll take a seat on one of these benches.
Okay.
And if you can hear me, that's great. And if not, and you know, I'll make myself scarce. Hey, look, the mighty MG. Look over there, the mighty MG5.
Whoa, all right.
My parents just bought one of those.
Oh, really?
My mom and my stepdad got theirs a couple of weeks ago, and they love it. And but my wife wouldn't let me buy the mighty MG5 because she says it looks like an old man's car. And as I pointed out to her, I'm no spring chicken, so maybe I fit the old man car. But she wanted to buy the ZSEV. So we do have an MG, but just not that one.
Right on. All right. So, okay. So I'm really looking forward to hearing about the Toyota BZ4X from Kyle here. But I think first we should hear from our special guest, Misko Electric. So, Lacey, welcome. And I understand that you attended the Ford F-150 Lightning launch the other day. But you also spent some time recently with the BMW iX. And you put out like the most amazing video with it the other day. So let me just say, it has to be one of the best review videos I've seen in a while. It's really good. You cover all kinds of things I haven't seen other people mention, and you have like good videography, even like a car follow shot in there. And then you're popping all kinds of info on the screen, like all the various ranges you could expect to get with different size tires. And it's like, you know, it's a lot of work. I know you put a lot of effort into making that video. So if you haven't watched it, you probably should. And also subscribe to her channel. The more subscriptions she gets, the more invites she gets to go to, you know, events, and gets to show, you know, do this kind of work with other cars. So definitely subscribe to her channel. So tell us a little bit about the BMW iX. I think it's like Kyle has seen it, and
I know Tom said that he really likes it. And I know you guys have talked about it before. I spent a whole day with it down in South Carolina at the Performance Center and around the facility, around the plant, driving it around all day. And, you know, I used to work as a contractor for BMW, so I've spent a lot of time in their cars. So I think, you know, my perspective of, you know, I've spent time in all of their cars, and I really am a fan of SUVs, as if you guys follow me. A lot of people know that because I like to take my bike rack and bring my e-bikes with me when I go places. I like to go camping and really use the vehicles, and this form factor helps with that. So I really love the iX. I just always have felt that BMW has been a leader in innovation and the types of features and technology. So if you've seen my video, I only touched like the surface of the things that they've integrated in the iX, and that they've had some of them in previous BMWs for a while now. But I really love the iX. And yeah, I'm talking right here about how the front grille is really polarizing and it's really not my cup of tea. But honestly, like, once you get in the vehicle and you're driving it, it's just so impressive. And I really love it with the drive modes. There's a very big difference between them, and I'm a huge fan of that. When I change drive modes, I want to feel like I'm in a different car. The just technology that's in it is outstanding. So yeah, I love the iX. But the deal breaker, which is when I was recently shopping for a car, I just got a Tesla Model Y about a month ago. Okay. And when I was shopping, I actually specifically was looking to get something that had a receiver for a tow hitch, and mostly, like I said, to just take my e-bikes and stuff with me and use it when I go camping and everything like that. So unfortunately, the iX doesn't have that. But man, after I drove this, I was like, oh God, I want to just trade in my Model Y and get this. It's that good.
It's pretty up spec too, though, right? Is the price is quite a bit higher than the Model Y. Yeah.
Yeah, this one was, I think the way this one was listed was about 100 or so. But they started about 80.
Yeah, that's not so bad. Oh, that was an interesting thing you pointed out here. So it has like an onboard 11 kilowatt hour charger, but the actual EVSE they offer you is like
9.6 or something like that.
Yeah, it's like it doesn't take full advantage of the ability of the car. What's up with that?
Yeah, I don't know. It must just be whoever they're working for as a, you know, with the supplier for that charger, it seems to me. I thought the same thing. I was like, that's kind of an interesting choice that they're not going to try to max that out.
Right. I also thought it was interesting. Look, you even have yourself pop up on the screen. You got all the, I mean, this is like amazing work, Lacey.
Thank you. Like, yeah, I spent a lot of time on it, so I'm glad you liked it.
Yeah. Also, so you have this little bit in the back, you're in the back seat, and on the footwell, there's something kind of lit up at one point. I'm not sure if I can find it here for sure. But do you know what I'm talking about here? Like it, right there in that shot, you can kind of see it underneath the footwell.
Yeah, it seemed like it was like some kind of a venting system underneath, like when I'm sitting in the back seat.
Yeah, I'm
it's
like
right
searching
for that.
I'm like searching all over for it. Yeah. Oh well.
It cuts quick.
Yeah, and I also like you were talking about the crystal knob shifter on the in the front.
Mm-hmm.
And that you can. Yeah, you can see there, but you can like trace your finger around it and like spell out things.
Yep.
I didn't even know that was a thing. That was like.
Yeah, they've had that functionality on the iDrive controller for a really long time, but I didn't think it would work with this crystal design. And I was like, let's see. I started writing. I'm like, oh, sure enough. They actually were able to integrate it on that too. And yeah, it's just so pretty. And the interior is so comfortable. I love the new iDrive system. Yeah, I really like the iX.
Nice. 500 top speed, 124 miles an hour. You got all this information popping up on the screen here. That's great. So what do you think of the driving dynamics?
I drove most of the time in sport mode, which is really responsive. But it was funny because as we were going, Tim, my producer, and my camera guy, he's like, okay, you gotta change it out because it's just like so intense. I kept like accelerating really hard, and he's like, I can't handle it back here anymore. You have to turn it into efficient mode. So, I'm sorry.
So did it make a really big difference? Sport to is it Eco?
Yes, it's called Efficient. So they've changed. Okay. It used to be like Comfort, Eco, you know, individual and sport, but now it's personal, which is the customization mode, efficient and sport mode. So the efficient mode, it really does tone it down a lot, and it is really designed to maximize the range as much as possible. And it has this like efficiency trainer. So it like the personal assistant will talk to you and tell you like ways that you can drive more efficiently to maximize the range. We're talking about regenerative braking and all these other things and acceleration and all that.
Right on. Let me advance forward. Okay. So overall, yeah.
I loved the ADAS. The and I've like I've said, I've spent a lot of time in these cars, and I've always really liked their system as far as it goes when you're on the highway and it keeping you in the lanes and stuff like that. I felt like this did a much better job than previous generations of keeping it centered in the lane. The lane changing was super fast. I was very surprised by that, because most systems just kind of gradually take you over into the lane very like slowly and smoothly. This was like, I'm getting you over. It would like dive into the lane and then straighten out real quick.
Right. But I saw that. So Kyle, did you have that experience? Did you find?
So have not used the driver assistance in the IX. Lacey spent a lot more time with it than I have. I only had it for 20 minutes, something like that.
But we
have
we
have I4 this week, and we have IX coming in a little bit for to spend some time with. But yeah, Lacey, love it around, you know, sort of Greer, that entire facility in South Carolina. Isn't that just the best place on the planet?
Yeah, it was great. I know that's your former home, kind of. So yeah, I was spoiled. I was like really spoiled getting that car for a whole day. They gave us a little access to the they gave us full access to the I4 and the IX, but I spent so much time with the IX that I didn't have as much time with the I4. So I do have some stuff that I'm going to be putting out about the I4, but it's more of like a snapshot, smaller scale versus like this was 21 minutes long. This was a long video, but I went in deep dive depth with this one. So hopefully we'll get another I4. But yeah, I didn't do any like charging tests or anything like that. So I'm excited to see your review, Kyle, because I want to see how that I've seen the charts for their charge curve and everything like that. But I really want to see how you
yeah, we'll probably match whatever they say. I mean, you have a physical limitation of 500 amps on CCS. So it's not going to be big numbers no matter what we do.
What's the peak charging? 190 or something?
Yeah, 200. Yeah, just about. I mean, you're just never going to get more than that on a 400-volt system car.
Mm-hmm. Right. Oh, it has this weird rear steer. For some reason, it didn't click with me that the BMW iX has rear steer. Mm-hmm. So that was cool. But it also had that weird parking memory. So it'll back itself out by memory. It kind of remembers how it pulled in, and it will do the thing, same thing in reverse or something.
Yeah, so it has a backup assistant. So what it does is it remembers your path into your driveway. So if you live in like an area where you have a really long driveway and it's super tight and you don't want to back it out, it will remember that path, and you press the button and it will take control of everything, and it'll back you up in that same path so you don't hit anything. I love that. And they've had that for a little bit, but I just love that feature. It's just such a great usable feature for people who live in those types of situations.
So we're watching your video on the screen here now, and just you're doing this self-parking thing where it's backing itself into a parking spot. So it got really close to that was that Mini Cooper on the side. So it got did it get so close that the proximity sensor sounded or anything?
Yes. Yeah, so they were going they were going off, but the thing was is that I actually tried this twice, and the first time that I tried it, I was so nervous that I actually put on the brake. And last iteration of the system, it would actually completely disable the system if you did that. And this time it didn't. I was kind of surprised by that too. It was like, okay, I put my foot on the brake, and then it still, once I released off of the brake, it still started performing the maneuver. So I was very happy about that too, because a lot of the systems are just like, if you touch the steering wheel or if you engage at all, it will automatically shut off. So, but
So I recently did this with the Kia EV6, and like, so it was parking itself in there, but it would get so close to like this pole that was sitting there, and then the proximity sensor would go off. And like, I didn't trust it. Like, if it doesn't, like, if the sensor is like beep, 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 you know, sounding the alarm, I don't know. I'm like, I have to put my foot on the brake because it's not my car. I don't want it to bump into a, you know, back into a pole. I don't know. That's, it seems like a really bad way of doing things. I don't know.
And this system moved really fast. Like, just like the ADAS, they've tuned it really, they fine tuned it so that all the maneuvers are happening very smoothly, but they're happening really quickly too. So, yeah, I was so nervous, but then Tim he got out and was shooting me from the outside perspective, and he's like, oh, you have plenty of room, don't worry. And even though I could see it, I was just like, I still feel like I'm so close by looking at the mirrors and stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, that was just one of the parking features. Like, it does some remote parking and stuff like that too, that I didn't have a chance to show, but yeah, it's just an incredible machine, that thing.
There you are, showing off, you know, you could trace the word go on the crystal shifter thing. That's great. All right. Let's take that off. So, yeah. So if you like, again, if you haven't seen Lacey's BMW iX video, I highly encourage you to go check it out, check out her channel, subscribe to it, and all that stuff.
You guys should write an article about it on your Inside EV site.
Yeah, actually, I was going to put it in front of the editors. I'm not sure what we have in the way of iX reviews, but if, you know, if we don't have anything, you know, I thought it was a great one that I'm gonna put it in front of them at least. Yeah. So you are also at the Ford F-150 Lightning launch at the Rouge Factory EV Complex in Dearborn, in Michigan, and you not only got to ride in the truck and ask questions, but you got to hang out with Jim Farley, who is like CEO of Ford, Darren Palmer, who is head of electrification, I believe, who was with us before on our show here, and is a great, great guy, and Joy
Falotico,
thank you, and she is the president of Lincoln. And you got to hang out with Sandy Monroe.
That's right.
People might know as the teardown specialist, who's, you know, more recently been tearing down a lot of Tesla stuff, and is a big fan of what they're doing over there. So you already have one video up covering this event already, and I think you might have another one coming.
Yeah. So I have an extended version of Sandy and I walking through the assembly line. So essentially the video that I put out of the launch event and the assembly line tour was kind of a comprehensive of like, this is the whole event that I experienced, kind of like a vlog, and then a little bit of talking with some of the executive team. And then I just picked some of the, you know, key highlights from the tour with Sandy and put it in that, but I'll have an extended version coming up probably today of the Sandy and I assembly tour walk, which it was funny because it all started at World Headquarters, where they had rides that you could take in the F-150 Lightning, that was my first time riding in it. It was very smooth. It's fast for a pickup, that's for sure. but you know, after I got done riding in the F-150, we were about to go over to the shuttle buses. That they had a ton of shuttle buses to take all the media over to the complex where the plant is. And I turn around and I just see Sandy walking around. And I had I've spent a lot of time with those guys. I've been over to their facility and we were hanging out at CES and stuff like that. So I'm like, I'm like, Sandy. And he turns around. He's like, oh my God, hi. And I was like, where's your crew? Like, where's your camera guy or whatever? And he's like, oh, we only had one invite. So we weren't able to bring the guys. So he was just walking around by himself. I'm like, well, you can hang out with us for the day. And he's like, okay, great. And so when we got to the plant facility, he was like, I want to walk the assembly line. I'm like, great, let's do it. And so we recorded a whole piece of Sandy taking us down the assembly line and showing us, you know, this is what, and this step is, and I like how they did this, and I don't understand that. So there's a lot of really cool insight that Sandy provides us. It's his expertise, but also he used to work at Ford. So it's just really interesting to hear him talk about that whole experience and say really the things that he appreciated from what Ford's doing on that particular line, because this building was completely renovated to support F-150 Lightning, and they made it as big as they possibly could. But also Sandy mentioned, you know, they said they were going to do 150,000 units, but he seemed to think that it looked big enough that they might be able to produce more. So they might be under promising and over delivering. But yeah, it was really great to walk with him down the line and hear all his insights.
So, and I noticed on the ride over, you passed by a parking lot that was like full of Ford F-150 Lightnings as well. So they've been producing them for a little while, right?
Yeah. So Jim Farley said that they've got about 2,000 right now that have been produced. And in that lot, I mean, there were hundreds. They were just sitting there in the lot getting ready to ship to the dealers, to their new owners. So I think that's kind of their whole idea is that they're going to under promise and over deliver. So I think these are going to get to customers pretty quickly. And they said, you know, they're doing a media drive. I think, Kyle, you said you're going to the media drive, right?
Yep. Be there on Tuesday.
Ooh, awesome. So yeah, that's coming up pretty quick. So people are actually going to get some time behind the wheel to actually do reviews and stuff.
So are we talking for F-150 Lightning next week, Kyle?
No, I think the embargo is May 10th.
Oh, okay.
But I'm sure we can talk about like everything. I think Ford usually on their programs just embargoes driving impressions.
Okay.
Because we've been able to do everything else with a stationary F-150 Lightning. And yeah, I was really bummed to have missed this event. We have just been filming like crazy, so couldn't justify taking two days basically to go out and see all this. But watched a whole bunch of videos from yourself and other creators, and it was awesome to see all the excitement. And yeah, cool stuff for sure.
I like this shot. Like, so we're watching Lacey's video here on YouTube, and it's got her and Sandy Monero are walking around like the chassis of a Ford F-150 Lightning. It's on like one of the little automated robots that carries pieces, chunks of the truck all around the factory. And you can see like the frame, the battery inside, the components, everything is kind of wired up. This is like my favorite shot of the F-150 Lightning, because you can actually kind of see, you know, how they've built it. You know, it's got the traditional kind of frame, right? I believe.
Yeah, it's body on frame. So there are a couple things that are a little bit different because the F-150, this is like the first implementation of the independent rear suspension. So he was commenting on the castings in the back, which he thought were really impressive and huge.
Right.
And then also it has dual onboard chargers. So like mounted above the two motors on either axle, there's just quite a lot more going on than typically what you would see. But so he was commenting on that kind of stuff too, which was interesting.
It was interesting. So this little back of the footage we went by, you had some footage where this big machine, let's see if I can find it real quick. Yeah, this thing. So I saw this in pictures, in footage, and like, what is that? So tell us what this is.
So essentially the F-150 Lightning and other F-150s have a onboard scale system, which tells you how much is in for your payload. So if you are bringing a bunch of stuff, and the girl touched on it at the beginning of my video a little bit, where if you have like a bunch of mulch in the back of the truck and you go to the onboard scales system, it will tell you exactly how much there is if you're overloading, so that you can take some out and it's, you know, safe for the amount that you're using. I think it's just over 2,000 pounds for the payload. So what that machine does is it takes that swing arm and puts the pressure on the back of the bed in order to calibrate the onboard scale system. And that ramp is a scale itself. So that's how it determines the appropriate, calibration.
Cool. That's pretty nifty. So also getting back to the front for the beginning of the video, they mentioned something else. You asked about differentials, locking differentials.
Yeah. And I think she misspoke because she said something about the front differential locking, but I think she meant the rear.
Okay. So it has a rear lock. So the rear differential can like physically lock.
Yeah.
Okay. That should come in handy. We've seen, we've been talking about this on the show recently with Kyle, talking about the Rivian R1T, and like the Hummer EV does this as well. The Hummer EV locks physically in the front, but it has a virtual lock in the back. But the four motor EVs, they do some virtual locking, but apparently it's hasn't been working that well off road in some situations. But you know, so it's interesting that the Ford F-150 Lightning has like a mechanical, you know, locking thing. So supposedly that should work better, right, Kyle? He's on mute. He's
got it. Sorry, my mouse wasn't working there. Physical lockers will always work better than virtual lockers, at least with software that I've experienced.
Right on. All right. So anything else you learned?
So actually I chatted a little bit with Jim Farley for about like 5 minutes, which I was a little shocked by, but he came over and we started talking and he was telling us about Future Product, which I thought was really interesting.
Right.
So he said that this new truck, and I'm sure some people have seen articles about it, that they've spent the last 2 years developing this new truck that's going to be built down in Tennessee. And he mentioned to me some interesting things about it having a very radical design and being controversial. But it also has active and deployable aero. And so they're really trying to aim towards like very high efficiency with this next truck. And he also said that it's going to be, I think, $7,000 different of the F-150 Lightning for the price point, or 100 miles difference in more range. So he was just like, the efficiency that we're achieving is pretty drastic. So I thought that was fascinating, the whole concept of deployable aero. He said flaps like, you know, you would see on like a semi truck. So okay. Yeah, I was like,
So
fascinating.
So during the presentation, he said his like to everybody, and this is what people wrote up in their articles. So he said, "I wish we could bring you all down there, but we're already pushing dirt down in Blue Oval City in Tennessee for another electric pickup truck that's different than this one." And you know, when they first, you know, talked about opening up the big manufacturing complex in Tennessee, they were talking about the next generation electric F-Series trucks, as well as advanced batteries. So in my mind, I was thinking like, okay, it's like the basic platform of the F-150, the F-250, 350, and, you know, but this sounds, I don't know, this sounds like something that's like totally different. Maybe they'll do that as well, but yeah, this sounds like a totally different thing that they're going to sell at the same time as the F-150 Lightning.
That's what it sounded like to me. I mean, I think probably they have a couple more years till that comes out. Well, that they're going to be building it down in that Tennessee plant, so they still got a little bit. But he was very passionate and excited to tell us that. So I'm very interested to see what comes of this.
Okay, right on. That's pretty interesting. Active and what'd you say?
Deployable aero. Like, like I'm just thinking of like an active aero system coming out the back of the taillights or something like that. I don't know. It's
right, like on the Mercedes EQXX thing that had the back section that kind of just like extends out as it's going.
Yeah, like I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see how they implement something like that on a pickup truck.
Yeah, so that's like 400 miles of range possibly then?
He said about 100 miles of range more. So if the F-150 Lightning has 320 for the most, I mean, maybe, yeah, like 420.
Right. Kyle, any thoughts about this?
No idea. I mean, it all sounds pretty interesting.
Right?
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it just caught my ear when he said it. You know, it's like, you know, it's kind of like perked up because, you know, he put like a lot of emphasis on it, and you know, we heard the announcement, you know, last year that they're going to be building trucks, but this just sounded like very intriguing, like, oh. And yeah, so I mean, we wrote a story about it. I think Motor One has a story as well, and I saw other outlets, you know, pick that up. So anything else we want to talk about here?
Yeah, I mean, it was fun.
Fancy coffee.
Yeah, it was like put a little logo on there. No, it was great. Yeah, check out my video if you haven't seen it.
All right. All right. So Kyle, so you had the pleasure of spending time this week with a couple interesting Toyota products, the Toyota Mirai and the BZ4X. Now, I really want to hear about the BZ4X a lot, but I know you were very excited about the Mirai and you got to learn how to use the hydrogen dispenser. So do you want to start there?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think hydrogen fuel cell vehicles should be really considered electric cars. So I'm not sure we really need to harp on it on this podcast. Thought it was fascinating. I'm not saying I think it's better than battery electric or not the direction we should go for passenger vehicles. But it was really interesting to experience hydrogen for the first time, find all the quirks, the weird things about it, how it drives these things. It's something that I've always just kind of poo-pooed the idea of hydrogen for passenger cars, but it actually works in Southern California based off of our experience. I know the infrastructure is the biggest problem. And like for a battery electric vehicle is much more efficient in terms of the use of your electricity and how it's generated. And so, yeah, battery electric for passenger cars probably is the answer. But we have a electrolyzer hydrogen fueling station that's sitting in our parking lot of our office here at Colorado State University, and it will be generated mostly by clean energy or powered by clean energy. And I'm like, well, you can buy a used Mirai for like 30 grand and they're right. 70 grand new. I'm talking like with 1,000 miles on it. So I'm like, that would be really fun to run one for a year, see what it does in the coldest temperatures, the warmest temperatures. And because it's not necessarily practical or feasible to drive a medium or heavy duty truck every day to the airport, do the runs, all this stuff, I thought it'd be a fun like airport executive luxury shuttle because it's basically a Lexus LS underneath, just a little bit shorter. And so I'm fascinated by it. I would like to use the Mirai to learn about what I think is the best application for hydrogen, which is medium heavy duty stuff, fleet stuff. But learned so much with this car, really did, and was honestly impressed. We took it on a road trip. We did a whole bunch of stuff, and the infrastructure, at least for us, worked perfectly. And they just don't work outside of California at all. So man, if we got one here, we would just be on a 150-mile leash from the office. We'd have to turn around, come back, and charge, which would work for like 99% of my driving.
So this is on your AutoSpec Reviews channel. We just had the little thing flash. So I don't know. So we're watching this right now on your video on the screen here, if you're listening to us. So it's got the Mirai. You've got the Mirai on the screen on the parking garage in the downtown. Not, where is that?
Pasadena.
Pasadena, right. So I've seen this in person. I've actually driven a little bit. And, you know, some cars, you think they're maybe ugly when you first see the picture of them. And then you go and see them in person. And it's like, oh, actually, that works. It doesn't work for me. I don't know the Mirai. Like, this is like the styling on the other side.
I think it looks awesome. I think it looks great. It drives great. Really? Honestly, the car I thought was like fantastic, mostly because like it's all fascinating to me. The drivetrain was truly fascinating. It was really fun to use the stations. It was more for me about learning or having my first experience with hydrogen rather than it was about the Mirai, really.
Right.
And we went to LA to do a whole bunch of BZ4X testing because I asked Toyota, like, hey, when are you going to send one of those out to us in Colorado? And they were like, ooh, not for a long time. So I'm like, okay, we'll go wherever they are. So that's okay.
So the Mirai driving experience, what did you think of that? Because I thought it drove like in a straight line at least pretty decently. You know, but
It cornered pretty well too. I took it up in the canyons.
Okay.
And so just like really nicely balanced. It's rated at 9 seconds 0-60. I think Motor Trend tested at 7 something. So it's not that slow, but you do have to use wide open acceleration at higher speed. And like that's fine with me. I don't mind going wide open all the time. I think that's kind of fun. It's just like a comfortable luxury electric sedan thing, but it's a Toyota, so it's not pretentious. And it's so weird in so many ways. It makes these hissing noises. And when you floor it, water comes out the back and it's crazy and the best. And I love all that stuff. I like it because it's fascinating, not because I think it's better.
Right. I get you there. I don't know. Lacey, do you have any Mirai questions?
I think what you just said was kind of interesting is that when you floored it, that the water came out the back. I feel like that is kind of like for the people that are big, like internal combustion engine people, that might be like a slight, you know, fix for what they're missing with full BEVs.
I don't think that's going to do anything. People drive around in combustion cars and go, I love this stuff coming out of the exhaust.
Okay, I'm reaching.
Yeah, there's it's compromised in many ways, but it can start at minus 30 degrees Celsius, which I thought was very interesting. Because you would think it would just freeze up at freezing and like wouldn't work, but they have heaters.
Well, because it has water coming out.
Yeah, but it has heaters, so it can start down to minus 30.
Nice.
I don't know. I don't know about hydrogen. I don't know. I mean, I think it's cool that you drove it. And like you said, the fascinating whole experience of trying the infrastructure, because that's one thing that I've heard kind of horror stories about, is that even people, you know, filling it back up, it takes a longer. It's not as responsive as obviously like a gas pump, but it's not as long of a wait as a electric car. But
well, it's actually so much less of a wait than an electric car, because in this case, we did a dead to 100% full fill, which gets, you know, about 300 miles driving it the way we were. The car's rated for like 350. So like even cruising at 85 to 100 miles an hour down the highway, I think it only does like 96 miles an hour, allegedly. But like just ripping in normal LA, you know, free flowing traffic, everyone does 100 miles an hour in LA. You know, it got about 300 miles of range. And I'm like, well, that's A, really good. Took it up the canyons, shredded wide open throttle the whole way up to Newcombs. Only burned a quarter of a tank up and back, which in a battery electric vehicle, I toast full battery doing that, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's like 30, 40 mile loop, maybe 45 mile loop. And that's a full battery charge in most cars for me. And so like was impressed with those two things. And then with a battery electric vehicle, especially in Southern California, a lot of people don't have access to home charging. And this is really the only use case I see where this is better than a battery electric vehicle. And it's if you have to rely on DC fast charging to get a full charge, you have to wait an hour in some cars. Mustang Mach-E, you have to wait 2 hours. BZ4X, over 5 hours. We'll get to that. but in the Mirai, 4 minutes, 45 seconds, 0 to 100% full range in that period of time. Now, most people will DC fast charge their cars to 70, 80%, and it takes anywhere from, I don't know, 15 to 45 minutes in most cars, but still 15 to 45 minutes, way more than hydrogen. And you get a credit card that you just get free hydrogen on for $15,000 worth.
Right. For now. But hydrogen, actually, I think if it wasn't subsidized or given to you free, it works out. I think it's like between $7 and $9 a gallon or something, basically like the equivalent price. So it wouldn't necessarily be cheap.
No, you know, I think we calculated a full charge because I paid for it. Toyota gave us one of those cards. I just used my own to pay for it because that's what we always do. We never ask for fuel from automakers or anything like that. So I just paid for all the fuel. And it was anywhere from about $60 to $80 from dead to full on our experience.
Okay. That's not so bad.
It was like the same as gas equivalent.
300 miles of range.
I mean, it would have cost, we figured out that basically it would cost the same as a normal other luxury V8 powered executive sedan, which would be equivalent to this.
Right.
This makes less power. And certainly there's minimal hydrogen stations. I'm not saying it's better. Combustion is still better than this.
Right.
You know, in terms of usability, if you don't have an apartment, but if you want to drive electric and you don't have charging at home, then you live in Southern California and you can lease one of these things for $600 a month, which is the nicest car you can lease for $600 a month. And they give you free fuel. Like it works, but just
this is great.
It's just a very limited use case.
Right.
But I think for heavy duty stuff, medium duty stuff, where sort of density of battery packs and weighing things, and you know, you have the bigger batteries you put in it, the less payload you have. That's where this starts making some sense. But I was really fascinated by the whole experience. Loved the Mirai and would totally get one once our hydrogen station gets turned on here to run for a year and just see if we can break it.
Right on. Hey, so I noticed besides like the Mirai that you also, and the BZ4X, I just noticed on your channel now that you spent some time with the 2022 Tesla Model 3 Performance and did a 70 mile an hour range test. And you have a video now up on your channel since yesterday. So, and I saw you tweet about this or Facebook or something that you said that like the 2022 Model 3 Performance is a lot different from the one that you had. Like, yours was 2019?
Mm-hmm.
So in 3 years, what's changed for it?
Like almost everything. In many ways, the car has gotten worse. In many ways, the car has gotten better. We have a whole video covering this topic also on this channel where we reviewed this car in Las Vegas. We took it up into the canyons and had a great time. And it was pretty fun. It's soft. It's like they removed all the performance suspension out of the car. So you're going around on ramps and it's like the dampers aren't even into the car. You're just bouncing up and down. It's not controlling body motions at all. So in terms of performance, the car's gotten worse, But it's not to say that the previous car, the earlier cars, were really that hardcore anyway. They rode rough, but when you really push them, they kind of are soft anyway. So you still need aftermarket suspension if you're going to use it for what the car is intended for, which is performance driving.
Right.
And that's what's going to happen to this car. Drew's going to go through it, put wheels, tires, suspension, roll cage, everything he can, rip the weight out of it and go, nice. Go full Maxi Max. So that'll be cool.
Do you know what suspension he's putting in for, like, from what supplier?
Yeah, I think he's going to go KWV3s, I believe. And okay. Then the nice thing about those is they're fully adjustable, so you can go super soft but still have the car low or crank it up.
Oh, nice. That sounds good.
Yep. And yeah, Drew and Alice, they're having their child here in a few weeks, so I ordered them all the Recaro baby seat stroller combo things. So they'll have the Model 3 with all the racing mods and the Recaro baby racing car seat, which will be awesome.
Congratulations, Drew and Alice. That's awesome. So yeah. you did a 70 mile an hour range test. I guess we're watching your video here. You're at the charging station filling up. Let me just fast forward.
Using that CCS to Tesla adapter there.
Oh, okay. All right. And you put a towel on it too, right?
No, that was when I did the charging test at the supercharger yesterday.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah. We're shooting a ton of videos right now, mostly because I'm planning to go on a road trip for 3 weeks or a month or so to Alaska. And we have to produce daily videos on this channel and also daily videos on other channels. Other channels get one or two a week. So we're like bulk filming like crazy. So that we can do this Alaska road trip in the Sprinter.
The true life of a YouTuber.
Content's key.
Right. And the consistency, right?
Yeah, we've committed to daily uploads for reviews. And so if we miss a day here, you'll see us put two up later on. That's our plan.
So 70 mile an hour highway range test, how did it do?
280 miles at 70 miles an hour, which is exactly 40 and a bit more than my Model 3 performance, which has the smaller battery pack and it's degraded a little bit. So essentially, if I were to sell my Model 3, which I am, right, and then I was to get a new one, which I haven't planned to because I think I'd get an S, then I would gain realistically almost 50 miles of range by upgrading to the same car, but a newer model year.
That's significant.
Very significant. And it's got a bigger battery pack. So I was able to pull just about 80 kilowatt hours out of it at 70 miles an hour. Charges very differently than my car. Lots of differences. All the videos coming. So we have plenty to talk about here. But the car is so much quieter, but like feels cheaper. Like the seats aren't as good. Steering wheel feels worse. Still creaks and rattles in the new car. Like the whole seat creaks. Like it's not perfect. Autopilot totally crapped out on our range test. And then like came back and started working again. So that still got the typical Tesla bugs here or there. But I just don't know what else you could buy for the money that drives as well as this car in terms of a performance setting.
Right.
You just get this, slap a set of coilovers on it, get some sticky tires, pads, fluid for brakes, and you are an autocross king.
Yeah, that's really good on tracks, actually. Yeah, I've seen different people that just mod their, you know, put different suspension on it, do some mods and take it to the track, and they get really good times with it.
Yep. They're pretty serious machines when you drive them hard. And I, again, just, you can't ignore the value for money with a Model 3 performance. It's just like anything, like you can get in any competitor at that price point and nothing will keep up with it.
Right on. Any Tesla Model 3 2022 Tesla Model 3 questions, Lacey?
Well, I just, a point that you made about the ADAS of the autopilot, since I just got my Model Y, I've already taken on two road trips. One was down to Tennessee and then over to South Carolina for the BMW review. And then I just took it over to New York City for the New York Auto Show. And I will say my autopilot, there's a lot of phantom braking, which I don't like. But I've been experiencing a couple issues with my autopilot too. So I know how you feel.
So a lot of people have been attributing a seeming increase in phantom braking to the visual only setup they're using now. I don't know, Kyle, did you mention that recently?
Yep. So we actually just benchmarked both cars. So we started this new driver assistance challenge.
Right.
So
right.
Yesterday I ran the vision car and my radar car. It was actually the last video I shot with my car before it leaves. And okay. So vision, well, we'll let you see the results. But I'll tell you this, Vision didn't phantom brake in our test, and the radar car did.
Oh, okay.
Interesting. Well, yeah. In our Model S, we have, like, I felt like there's, like, no phantom braking, and that has radar as well.
Mm-hmm. I still experience phantom braking on radar cars, but on the range test, the camera-only car did phantom brake a couple times. But, like, so does my radar car. I haven't spent enough time. Like, you've done a lot more on the Vision car than I have. But I will say there's this one point on I-25 because I do that Denver Fort Collins slog all the time. And no matter what Tesla I'm in for like the last 4 years, it's just full brakes every time I go to this bridge. Every update, You would think Tesla would just be like, oh my God, why does every Tesla hit the brakes here? And, you know, I've tried the whole warn everyone button. It doesn't do anything. No one looks at that stuff. And so, yeah, just silly.
John Gordon says on the chat, definitely have phantom braking with my Model Y more at night than during the day. Is that something you see too, Lacey?
I have noticed it kind of like the in-between time when sun is starting to set. That's like the sweet spot where it's, I think, maybe detecting more shadows or more crowns on the road or something. I don't know. Right.
And you know what's incredibly infuriating about the new camera-only cars is at nighttime, when you're on autopilot, they force auto high beams on, even if you try and turn it off, which is just aggravating because if anyone's ever been in a Tesla or really any car with auto high beams, they suck so much.
Really?
They truly suck. And so I'm driving through the middle of Nebraska in this range test and everyone oncoming is just flashing me. And I'm like, I'm trying to turn the headlights off over and over. So bad.
So I used to drive at night like for a living for like almost 15 years. That was like driving at night was my thing. And that sounds like hell. It's just, yeah. High beams are like, oh my God. All right. So let's talk about BZ4X. So I did get to see this car in person, but I haven't driven it. But you have now. And I don't know. This is a weird car. So this is like the first modern electric Toyota. I mean, Toyota's had a few electric vehicles before. They've had the RAV4 EV. They've had a couple of odd EVs like in Europe and Japan. But this is a really, you know, they're going to have a lot more electric vehicles coming in. And this is like the first one of that onslaught. And it has a twin over at Subaru, the Solterra, and a sort of twin in the Lexus RZ450E that Tom is driving right now. And so, yeah, so I don't know. Tell us about this thing.
Well, we missed the first drive just because we couldn't make it there. So, we asked Toyota, you know, when's the next earliest opportunity for us to get a video on it? And that's why we went out to California, because they're just not coming to Colorado quite yet. I mean, the response when I asked if it's coming to Colorado was pretty funny. They're like, ooh, nope, not anytime soon. So, yeah, went out to LA, picked it up. And honestly, overall, really surprisingly liked it a lot.
Okay.
A lot. And like, good. It's the right size. It actually looks great in person. I think maybe not great, but looks good in person, at least not offensive, I thought. They should have just called it the RAV4 electric because it feels about the same size. It's got really good ground clearance, incredible off-road or sort of soft road drivetrain control with this X mode. We have a whole video on our out of spec overlanding channel of us putting wheels in the air and watching it send torque translationally across the axle.
Oh, really?
And it came out, you know, it's really fun to watch it crawl up stuff, which was pretty cool. And as a driver, just awesome. Like here's the thing. There are so many Toyota people that will only drive a Toyota. And if they're getting out of their Corolla or RAV4 hybrid or even RAV4 Prime, this is going to feel like a noticeable step forwards. This is going to be the future to them. Now, if you're getting out of a e-tron iX or, you know, Model Y, this is like, okay, there's a little bit of a step back. But for a lot of people, this is good. And the car can do what most people needs to do. And so I think it's got plenty of acceleration. The driver assistance was surprisingly wonderful compared to other Toyota stuff I tested. Stayed right in its lane, no ping-ponging. Can't wait to run it through our hogback challenge. Dual motor setup was tuned pretty well. I still don't understand why it only makes 10 kilowatts more than the front-wheel drive car, but, you know, whatever, it drove fine. and it's just expensive. So the price is the big issue here, where when you start looking into things, you know, the one we tested was like 51 grand. And it's like, okay, you can still get the $7,500 tax credit, but that is sunsetting very soon. So like, get yours now. But they're not making many of them this year. If the base price of this car was like 32 to 35, I would be like, go buy one right now.
It's just that's cheap expensive. Though. There's not too many electric vehicles that are in that 32, 35. That's like a Bolt EV territory,
right? But that's where we thought maybe Toyota could come out with and use their massive scale to bring the price down, and you know, maybe not have the best on paper statistics, but really come in at a lower price. And they didn't do that. So then you have to compare this car in the wheelhouse of certainly ID4, but most notably Ioniq 5 and EV6. And that's where it's just like falls apart. And so, you know, if you start looking at a reasonably equipped SEL all-wheel drive Ioniq 5, it's significantly faster, significantly better looking. And here's the thing. The BZ4X is fine until you have to take a road trip. And that is where it is truly unbelievably hot garbage.
Uh-oh.
Technical term.
Right. So before we get into that real quick, the interior. So I think you've said before that you didn't like the driver's display where it is, the way it's set up there. Was that yours? Yeah. Okay. So in person, though, how'd you feel about it?
Yeah, fine, actually. Okay. Looks weird, but functional. Yeah.
Right.
And you look at it over the top of the steering wheel, which is the most awkward feeling.
Okay.
Yeah. So I thought it was fine. And the displays are all typical Toyota, nothing fancy, nothing attractive. The infotainment is a North American only version of the infotainment. And I think Toyota missed the ball, where they could have done a lot of customer education when it comes to electric cars, tips and tricks in the system. Here's how to find chargers. Here's how to activate the charger. Here's why you either should or shouldn't full charge your car every day, like every other automaker puts in their little system. This has no guidance, no help. Good luck to whoever's buying this thing. And it's just like they totally don't understand what the end user needs in cars. You know, I've been saying this for the last, you know, forever, but I've really hearkened on 3 points that every EV needs to have. And the reason I've narrowed it down is so automakers can get it in their heads. They need route planning to get you to the station and to your end destination. And the route planning needs to be optimized for time. Leave a 5 or 10% buffer on arrival, use the bulk of the charging curve, and then tell the person when to go to the next charger. I have a whole video on this. The next is the battery needs to be preconditioned on the way to a charger.
Right.
The car knows you're going to a charger. Make sure it can handle max power. Number three, when you arrive to the charger that the car has suggested that you go to, you should plug in and charge. And there should be no fuss with apps or anything like this. It should just work. This is very elementary items that Tesla's been doing for 10 years now. And battery preconditioning. Okay, let's just say at least 5 years now, 4 or 5 years now that other automakers have done on the CCS networks. It's doable. This car has none of them, but neither does ID4 and Ioniq 5. Like it's just crazy to me what's going on.
Right. So they're not alone in that respect, at least.
It doesn't justify their decision. This is Toyota. Right. This is going to be everyone's first electric car. This is one of the largest auto companies on the planet. They have the resources and they must know that these things are needed and they haven't put it in their car. So as a daily driver, a commuter, you charge it at home, you're going to do everything around town with it, which is how most people drive anyway. Perfectly fine. I'm going to see a million of them here in Colorado. People are going to love them. They're going to be so happy with them. And it's a car I would recommend to a lot of people who want a little bit of a soft rotor, especially here in Colorado with how good it did on the trails. Great approach angle, good ground clearance, almost 9 inches of ground clearance. It was really good for that kind of stuff. But if you have to take even one or two road trips a year, the charging is the major issue here.
Okay.
I think isn't the max charge rate like 200 or something like that? But it's just like that end I saw in your video was like getting to 100% is brutal because it drops to like 5 kilowatts or something like that.
Right. So the car is rated for a peak charging rate of 100 kilowatts. That's what they
God,
say.
Oh, God, that's what it was. Oh, my gosh.
100 kilowatt peak
for the all-wheel drive car. the front wheel drive car has a peak of 150 kilowatts claimed. Now, you know, we can get cars in the right state for DC fast charging. We had the car in the right state multiple times. We saw a peak of 86 or 87, I can't remember, kilowatts on this thing. So that's your peak. That only lasts from 0% to about 5%. That's your peak. And then it just nosedives, and it just nosedives all the way to single digits at 80 kilowatts.
Oh, yikes.
Yeah. So 0 to 80
kilowatts, you mean 80%?
0 to 80% is 1 hour, 2 minutes, something like that, which is kind of on par with what they claim.
You're right. That's like twice as long as it should be.
Well, it's more than twice as long as what it should be compared to Ioniq 5, which is 18 minutes, 10 to 80%, and about 24 minutes from dead to 80.
Right. I was just thinking, so this starts at $40,000, I believe, for the
42, right?
This is the ZVC.
That's a 44.
It's from 42,000. Yeah, right. 42,000. Right.
But again, the front wheel drive should charge much better. And in Europe, I have to mention the all wheel drive cars get the front wheel drive battery pack here, which charges better.
Right. So they have two different battery suppliers going on here. There's one's from CATL and one's from
Panasonic.
Is it Panasonic? Okay. And is it Panasonic that's the slow one?
I don't know which is which. I don't remember offhand. I knew when I reviewed it, but now I'm all confused.
Okay.
Either way, the all-wheel drive one gets 72.8 kilowatt hours versus 71.4 that the front-wheel drive gets, but charges incredibly frustratingly slowly.
Right. That's kind of amazing. That's like Bolt EV territory, basically, right?
It's worse than a Bolt, I think, when you factor in, you know, having to do a top charge. And so that's the thing. 0 to 80 is where this car will live. On a road trip, I guess you could do it. The problem is the range isn't that great on the highway. And I was planning on doing the range test. I went to the charger to do the range test, but it hadn't finished charging because range test, we have to leave full. It was 3 o'clock in the morning and I still hadn't finished charging. And I was like, oh my gosh, like I've been up forever. I literally would not make my flight home if I had done the range test.
Because
I had booked like 2 hours to charge this thing. I'm like, I know it's not going to be great, but I didn't expect 5 hours and 30 minutes or so, and it to still not have completed.
It didn't get to 100% on a DC fast charger in over 5 hours?
Right.
Oh my God.
Yeah, because at the top is where they just turn down the tap to like 1 kilowatt at 95%.
I mean, I guess don't ever charge it over 90-80% ever. I guess. I don't know. That's like.
And the wild thing is you can even go in the car and turn down your DC fast charging speeds more. You can cap it at 75 kilowatts or 50 kilowatts. Like, why would you ever want it to be slower than it ever does?
That's, man, dude.
So I guess the theory here is longevity. And we know this, that high charging rates at high states of charge are really hard on the pack. This is why it's going to be so interesting to watch EV6 and Ioniq 5's battery degradation over time.
Sure.
Because they stress the battery packs harder than just about anyone. You know, and Porsche's right up there too, stressing everything. And e-tron, big e-tron, 150 kilowatts, way past 80% on the new software now. So this is just like, holy smokes, like, it would never work for my lifestyle because we need probably, you know, fast charging rates and big range because we live out here in the middle of nowhere. But for many people who will never DC fast charge ever, which I would say is a large percentage of EV owners, is totally fine. Like I have friends that I would recommend to buy this car, even though the charging is not good.
Right, right. Yeah, for most. Yeah. What's the range again on it?
222 EPA. I was seeing at highway speeds a little bit under 200. So I would say I don't really know where it would come in, but it's not going to hit that at 70.
Right. See, that's like, man.
This is really like just for Toyota customers, I feel like. Like you said, this isn't made for someone that's like trying to compete against, like, because why wouldn't you buy the EV6 or the Ioniq 5 over this, other than like styling, because those are pretty polarizing or dramatic. Well, this styling
is polarizing too, I would say.
Yeah, this is pretty polarizing. I mean, yeah. I didn't mind it in person, but before I saw it in person, I was like, oh, what
here's
are
the
you
thing.
Even doing?
We don't even have to worry about who's going to buy it, because they're going to sell every single one they can make for years and without any issue whatsoever.
I think pretty much we can say that across the gamut with all EVs right now.
Yeah. It's like, really not just a bad car. Yeah. It was like actually impressively good and did things better than Ioniq 5 and EV6 in the drivetrain department, I thought. It had torque ripple at low speed. It had tons of torque coming off road. I was just very impressed with certain key areas of this vehicle that I'm like, no one's doing this as good as Toyota is with this in certain areas. Specifically on this dirt trail, I was really impressed.
We can say the same probably for the Solterra, is that it's going to be, people that are loyalists that probably go for this and they're going to be happy with it.
Yeah, it's like everyone who owns a Crosstrek in Colorado, which is every fourth car, will buy a Solterra, and they're going to love them because they don't really leave Colorado, because why would you? It's beautiful here. And, this can get you up on the trails. You can go to any hike you want to in this thing.
So we're watching the AutoSpec Overlanding channel video you have with the BZ4X right now. And this is a great little trail that you're on. It's like, it's a dirt
road. It's a very soft roady trail. It's a little dirt, a little bit of stuff. It gets difficult great more views, towards though. The top. And yeah, beautiful views. And we were just like, let's find we flew in and we're like, look at all these dirt roads on top of these mountains. Let's go drive those. And that's what we did. It was great for that.
Sweet. So like specifically what does it do better like off-road than that the Ioniq 5 or EV6 might not do?
Well, to be fair, I have not off-roaded those vehicles because I feel like this has more ground clearance, but you're looking at it right here. See that wheel spin? And then watch, it just pulls itself right up. And so we split it up to make it a little bit more dramatic, right? But like at the end of the day, you just stay in the throttle for like a 1 Mississippi, 2 Mississippi. It goes, oh, we got wheel spin, and it goes, clamps down on that, transfers the power over. Again, not as good as a locking diff or anything like that, but definitely like you could have a wheel in the air, two wheels with traction, no problem. You just mat the throttle. It sends the power where it needs to go. And that was very interesting.
That's like a goat path you're on there.
A little bit, but if you go again deeper in the video, if you watch it, you can skip all the fluff at the beginning because I'm known to ramble at times. You can go deep in the video and you'll see, where we really genuinely have wheels off the ground and we can teeter the car, and it was doing a good job.
Right on. Okay, that's cool. I mean, I'm enjoying watching this little video. If we talk about anything else, I feel like we should just keep this up here. it's great.
Yeah, so charging's not good, price is not good, but the build quality, the way the thing drives was very good. The driver assistance was very good. Yeah, overall, pretty impressive vehicle.
Interior quality, you felt was fine?
Yeah, I thought it was. And it's got radiant heating, which is the first time other than the iX I've seen that in a car.
That's true, right? It's got like by your knees or something. It's got radiant heaters.
I love that.
Yeah, it was really cool. It gets really hot. Like, don't touch it with your hands.
Okay.
Yeah, like you like go tss if you touch it. It was pretty wild.
Right on. So, anything else we want to talk about with the BZ4X at this point, then?
It's not the most interesting car on the planet.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. I haven't driven it, so I'd have to, but I'm looking at my...
It drives exactly how you would think it would drive. The brake pedal feels like every Toyota hybrid on the planet where it does regen blending. It has regen boost. They claim it has one pedal driving.
Right.
You actually need to use two pedals for.
Right.
Which makes no sense because it doesn't come to a stop.
I mean, Toyota's also people who had advertised a self-charging hybrid too, so...
Did they ever advertise that in the U.S.? Do you know?
No, that's a U.K. thing, I think.
Right, so I don't know. I cover our market, so I don't know.
But yeah,
but I thought it was cool that, the Toyota people, I know the people at Toyota in the U.S., and they were, like, actually genuinely excited about this thing. A lot of people like to say that Toyota's just, like, the devil and people hate them in our community. Right. But I'm not here to – I don't analyze companies. I'm not into stocks. That's not my world. Just give me the car. I don't care who makes it. You can cover the badge. And I'll tell you what I think. And I thought it was a really good car. If you'd never DC charged it, which is why their first drive programs were never DC charging, because it would have been bad for the all-wheel drive one at least. I'm going to test the front-wheel drive pretty soon.
Okay.
I thought it was, just like a, I'd be like, this is awesome. This is like the ultimate, what everyone wants, a small SUV, CUV that's not pretentious, that doesn't look like a spaceship, that is capable wherever you need to bring it. And was good at everything we did with it.
See, I'm looking at that range and it's like, man, that just kind of barely gets me down to the beach and back, you know, like 200 miles. It's not
too, I don't think it'd be too dissimilar from some of its other competitors.
Like Bolt EV, I think it would do a better job with range, but then I think this would probably ride better than the Bolt EV.
Oh, Bolts are pretty, they ride pretty well, I think.
Yeah.
You think this is soft too.
Okay. But ID4 is in that price range. I really enjoyed that car a lot.
We would get an ID4 over this. Like if we were shopping for a car for Alyssa, for example, who's sort of the prime target buyer in this kind of category because she's got the dogs and she wants to, you know, run around and she doesn't really take long road trips. So she wouldn't consider this. She would go ID4 probably is what she wants.
Right. Okay. So any BZ4X questions, Lacey?
I don't like how they chose that design choice to bring that, gray body cladding up to the headlamps. And I don't like it in the Solterra either. I just really despise that. But, I mean, that's personal preference. So I'm not surprised. Like, what you're saying, I'm not surprised by your review. Like, everything that you're saying, I'm like, okay, yep. Like, that's about right for their first.
Yeah, there's no surprises here other than how bad the charging is. Like, I knew it was going to be bad. I didn't know anything could be this bad.
That is.
I thought it was a joke when I first plugged it in because you guys were at the parking garage in Pasadena when we all went out to Cali. And when I plugged it into the 50 kilowatt charger there, I plugged it at like 20%. This was on the first day before we did any charging tests. And it said 7 hours to full. I'm like, well, that's a software bug because it must think we're level two charging. No, that does factor the time for a full charge on whatever charger you're on. Now, granted, it was only a 50 kilowatt charger, but like 7 hours.
That is kind of nuts. See, Peter Wright in the comments agrees with me. Bolt ride is very harsh.
I have literally boxes of instrumentation, of accelerometers, and a whole bunch of cool stuff. We got all this nerdy stuff from NI, all these crazy sensors and things. And we can instrument now ride quality. And sweet. So I guarantee you the Bolt doesn't ride as harsh as you think it does.
Okay. I mean, I took an earlier one for a test ride and it was pretty short and it was on kind of nice roads. So I'd like to try it again. Actually, I really want to buy one. So I put my,
you want to buy? Why? Why not?
Because I can afford it. It's something I can afford.
How much are they? Aren't they expensive?
Like 30,000. Hopefully, if I can find a good deal, I'm hoping what's like 30,000. What's a
used ID4?
Yeah, ID4 rear wheel drive.
Yeah, you don't need any more than that.
Yeah, I don't know. So I put my Spark in one of the online car companies that, you know, buys and sells cars, and they want to give me like $4,000 or $5,000 more than I paid for it. I'm thinking, I really should probably take advantage of this opportunity.
Yeah, ID4s used are $43,000.
Right. So the Bolt EV, because it had this big battery recall issue, I think there's a good chance the price won't be quite as premium on those because people have, you know, worries, concerns about, you know, battery issues in the future. So it might not be the first choice for some people. I don't know. I really like the refreshed version of the Bolt EV. I think they did a great job on the interior. It's like livable. I don't really don't want like the first gen too much.
Oh, that's so you're like thinking about like the new one.
Yeah. I mean, it's so much nicer. I mean, the old ones is like a sea of plastic and it's like,
I think the new one's still a sea of plastic.
I mean, but it's soft plastic.
I mean, in your case,
it's prettier,
you don't really need fast charging, but you would at least be able to cover the state of Florida if you needed to.
Right. And it's got 250 miles of range?
Yeah, real world, I think we tested right around 250 at 70 miles an hour.
In that so car. I can get to the beach and back, no problem, even in the wintertime. For me, that's like 100 miles each way. Down by Apalachicola, which is a great place to go
visit. They don't have any chargers down there, level twos or anything?
They do, but you know, maybe I don't have time for that. Maybe I want to spend all my time fishing in the water, you know?
I wouldn't understand that. I'm not a water guy, so that's...
Oh, man.
I would be like, Alyssa, you go sit on the beach. I'm going to go charge the car.
I just like floating in the ocean is the best. Just float.
Oh, no, that is not for me. I want no part of that.
Right on. Okay. So Yeah. Anyway, so yeah, that's why I'm thinking, like, in my head, Bolt Mate, because maybe I can get a deal and I can get a, you know, $13,000 or $14,000 for my Spark, which is like crazy money. And yeah, I don't know. I'm just wrestling with this right now. But trying to find a Bolt EV is like not easy either. I saw one great deal online.
We have like 50 of them sitting at our lot over here.
Okay.
So we'll drive one out.
I think like even services like Carvana and stuff have a ton of inventory on there too. I don't know if you've checked any of those, but the ones that
I have
also.
I even inquired at one was like 30,000 advertised, 30,000 is the new one. And I think it's, oh, we don't actually sell them. We don't actually have them. It's like, but you're advertising them on a website, like a big website. And anyway, and they haven't really got back to me except to send me junk emails. All right. So we should talk about a little bit of news besides that a little bit. So there's not really, I mean, we don't really need to spend a whole lot of time. We're already an hour and 20 minutes. Oh, that's great. So Subaru announced their pricing for the Solterra EV, which is the sister brother to the BZ4X. And it's a little more expensive, $44,995 starting at, plus $1,225 destination delivery charge, except for Alaska, where it's just a little bit more, $1,375. That's not bad, right? Because for whatever reason, the Solterra still is eligible for the $7,500 federal tax rebate, right?
Well, yeah, and so I think, is the BZ4X today.
Yeah, today, Toyota has a little bit longer until they hit that mark.
Right. And then it'll ramp down. It's not like it just goes away. You get that
within the
one-year
like,
phase out overall.
Right. So I think by the end of the second half of this year, it might start phasing out.
Yeah, so if your delivery is like December, you're probably going to get a $3,750 instead of a $7,500.
So the Solterra does, so it's a little bit more expensive, but I believe there's a few, it does get a few features that the BZ4X doesn't get. And I forget what they are right now. You're on mute. But I forget what those specific features are. I don't know if you know, Lacey.
I'm not sure. No. He's.
I see Kyle
you're
talking.
You're on mute, Kyle.
Oh, he's talking on the phone. Okay. He's not talking to us. Who
are we? Sorry about that. We're working a deal on a car, and this guy kept calling us.
No problem. So I don't. Do you know offhand what the extra little features that the Solterra gets that it's not on the BZ4X?
I haven't looked into it at all.
Oh, okay, I saw them mentioned somewhere the other day, but anyway,
it's
so they're
as unimpressive as the BZ4X in all the best ways for some people.
Right, but it's probably nice on the road.
I'm just saying because I'm a brand girl. I love Subaru, so I would go for that. And they always have dogs at the auto show.
I was
going
to say that.
Yeah.
The dogs at the auto
the
show
dogs.
Make the Subaru better.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah, I kind of like our family had a Subaru, like a 78, I think, Subaru wagon. That I love that thing. It was like so great. It would climb anything. In. It was just... It was like a tiny little wood box running on the highway. It felt like death was around every corner.
Honestly, like my friends that aren't ready to go EV, I recommend Subaru. I've had a Subaru. I just, they're such simple, good machines. They hold their value like crazy. That's like the main thing.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you're just so probably sick of them, Kyle, because you see them everywhere in Colorado. But
I don't even notice them anymore because they're literally everywhere. Just a sea of Subaru when you look out.
So also in the news, I wanted to mention this before we end, that the Volkswagen might be building the ID Buzz in the U.S. And they also, let me just turn this off. They also shared, one of the head designers of the Volkswagen Group shared a rendering of the Volkswagen pickup truck online the other day. And there it is right there. VW shows early rendering of ID Buzz pickup truck. And so they might, as well as the ID Buzz, they would possibly build this also in the U.S. I don't know if they should. Lacey, what's your opinion of this, looking at this? Is this something people would buy?
I don't think it's the prettiest thing, but I think it's cool. Like it very gives me the canoe vibes, the canoe pickup truck vibes.
Right.
So yeah, I'm into that. I like it. If I can make it more usable, then yeah, game on.
I don't know, Kyle. See, this kind of puts me in mind of the Hyundai Cruze in a way. You know, it's not like not a truck, but it's not a car.
Santa Fe.
Santa Cruz. Like, it's like a, I don't know what.
Oh,
like
yeah, Santa Cruz. Sorry, yeah.
Car-based pickup.
Yeah, truck. I just reviewed that it last Hyundai week. Love it. One of the best things it's on sale looking right now. Love okay that thing.
I saw the first one on the road yesterday.
Yeah. They look so cool. I know some people hate them. Some people love them. Everyone I showed it to was like, that's really ugly. And I'm like, no, it's cool.
I have to be honest. It didn't look as nice as I thought it would. Because I was kind of hyped on it. And then I saw it. I'm like, maybe I need to spend a little bit more time looking at it because it was just kind of going by in traffic. I was like, whoa.
Yeah. I mean, this like the new design language of Hyundai is a little weird. By the way, here, more important than this whole thing that's not going to happen anytime soon because we're not even going to get the bus for a couple of years. Right. MEB really needs a refresh, in my opinion. And they really need to up the voltage. They need to up the power. They need to up everything. They need software, hardware, make that thing optimized for now. The mid 2020s, right? That was designed back in 2017, 18, 19, when they were working on these chassis. Everyone is switching to 800 volt going forward. IONIQ 5, EV6, GV60 are the benchmark, no question. MEB needs a whole architectural mid-life cycle refresh, double the voltage, massive charging speeds, big power, because the cars drive great. They look great. They got the right image. I'm a huge Volkswagen MEB fan. I just think it's, you know, getting a little bit old at this point. Let's do a massive refresh, in my opinion. Be expensive, but I think it needs it.
Yeah. Well, they are building another platform, right? They do have another, like the successor to
Volkswagen
MEB
Group. Yeah. And then there's platforms within platforms for all the other brands as well.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they have to really compete on price because it's hard to compete with like what Hyundai Motor Group is doing with their charging speeds. And
it doesn't seem like it's hard to compete because ID4 is still sold out, waiting list massive.
Right.
I don't know if general buyers really understand the difference between charging speeds, driving, all of these things. I think they just see an electric car, most people, and right, they go, okay, well, they just don't know. They don't even know to think about difference in charging speed. And so, you know, for us, we live in our little nerdy world, but I do think for at least to please us, we need a little bit of a juice up on those things.
Nathan Green asks, didn't VW say an MEB refresh update is coming soon?
I don't know if they said it publicly, but they are working on it. But I'm just saying.
I read about it. Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Okay. So they're going to do something. Maybe not. I don't think they're going to go 800 volts. But
they're not going as crazy as I am suggesting they go.
Right. But I know they're bringing their software development in-house. And so they've
been doing that for 3 years. CARIAD's supposed to be the overarching software development group. And, you know, it's been a disaster. This entire Volkswagen ID4 software update situation, total disaster. Sorry, but those cars were started on sale a year ago with the promise of over-the-air updates, with the promise of plug-in charge, with the promise of all this stuff. We all bought into it. They all said it's coming. Guess what? Still not here. Oh, by the way, you actually have to take your cars to a dealer to flash on software there, and then they become over-the-air update compatible. It's just not good.
Right. I just get so mad because it's like, okay, EA, how did this car not launch with plug-in charge? Like,
I don't think it was on EA. I think it's on Volkswagen.
Right. I know, but I'm just saying, right. Like, you
mean Electrify America.
You're in the same building.
Like, yep. But in Europe, they didn't have plug-in charge at launch either. So it's more of a platform situation than it is with the charging companies. But it is hilarious that the Mach-E is over a year faster to plug-in charge. Not to say it worked great when it came out, because it really didn't. But at least it was over a year faster than ID4. And I remember the guys at EA, or maybe it was someone at Volkswagen. I actually don't remember who told me this, so no one sue me. But I remember they were like actually annoyed that Mercedes wanted to go plug-in charge with the EQS. They're like, they keep pushing us on plug-in charge. And they're like, it's a lot of work. I'm like, but it's needed.
Yes, it's necessary. It's a luxury
especially,
vehicle.
Yeah, that's especially with a luxury class.
I mean, every car is going to have plug-in charge at some point, you know. The sooner the better. You have that feature on your car. It's a selling point. You know, right now, people just can't get cars, so everything's selling. But at some point, you know, production is going to catch up with demand, and you're going to have, you know, strong advantages over your competitors, or at least not have weaknesses.
And people are going to start buying their second EVs and they're going to be like, okay, that's the thing I learned. I do not want that. And I know that that exists. So I'm going to go for this one instead because it's going to be the competitive advantage moving forward.
Well, I think my dad's a good example of that, right? So he's in the camp of owning EVs for a really long time, starting to really get into them, found out that the ID.4s are not meeting his charging requirements, switched to an Ioniq 5, and is the happiest guy on the planet.
That's what I was going to buy. I was going to buy an Ioniq 5 before I got my Model Y. And I called around to so many dealers, and they don't sell it in Michigan yet. So I was like calling everyone in New York and New Jersey, like literally all over the country. And every single one of them was like, no, 10,000 over sticker. And I was following. They had that tracker online.
I got the hookup for Ioniq 5s.
I wanted a specific one too, of course. I want a limited all-wheel drive, white on white.
Okay. Well, when you get to color.
The gray interior. I know. So I was being very picky because I didn't get the exact thing I wanted the last time I was car shopping. And so I was like, I'm getting it this time, the one I want. And everyone was like 10 over sticker. And then they kept calling me. Oh, I'm still trying to work on that. And I'm like, you know, no. And then we had to take the Model S in for service. We were getting the upgrade in the new computer. And the sales guy there was like, hey, I think I could. There's a car in Chicago that I could reroute to you if you want, you know, this Model Y. And I was like, I really want the Ioniq 5. And he was just like, I can literally get this car for you like within the week. And I was like, well, if you can get it to me that fast and it's about the same price
and it's going to hold its value.
Yeah. You can probably sell it for more.
Well, that's why I was getting this car because I was like, I have the pre-order on the R1T and it got the max pack option. So that's delayed until they told us it's delayed until February of 2023, but I think it's going to get pushed again. I just don't see. And I have the Ocean Coast interior for that too, the light interior. So it's like.
You need to have the Ocean Coast and the Rivian.
Is that that they pushed back the Ocean Coast interiors recently? Fall. Okay.
Right. Which still, it doesn't really affect me technically because I wasn't getting my car anyway till early 2023. But I think it's still going to get pushed again. So I was like, I might as well have the Model Y in the meantime. We might at that point, we don't know what we're going to do yet, but we might at that point then sell the Model S and then, you know, have the Model Y and the R1T until then the Cybertruck comes.
You have an order kind of for a Cybertruck?
Yeah, Tim has 4 orders for a Cybertruck.
Tim is Mr. Go Electric?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
So that's kind of the situation is like the EV train that's like happening right now at my house. But so till we get the R1T, which I think it's probably going to be more than what they're saying right now, February 2023, I wanted to get the Model Y, so...
Right. That Rivian is still such a wonderful piece of machinery.
I still haven't driven one. I saw Sandy brought his to the event and he let me sit in it and stuff like that. And he's like, yeah, you come drive it.
We got our good friend Will lives right up the street and he wants everyone to drive his truck. So make a video with it.
Well, Shaheen told me that he would get me one time and I want to do like a whole big piece on it. So, okay. I mean, like, my reviews, I like go excessive a little bit, but I also want to do like some interviews and stuff, but the day will come. I definitely want to get it before I get mine. I can't wait to drive it because I've just seen so many reviews and everyone's glowing over it. And I want to glow with it.
Right. All right. So we should probably get going soon, but before we do, we should bookend the show. We started with the Citroën Ami, and we should probably maybe end with it because with this bit of news that the Fiat Topolino may be resurrected as a rebranded Citroën Ami. So
that spec is stellar.
So cute.
So if you can't get the Citroën, you might be able to get it as a Fiat, maybe, possibly.
So I heard they're coming to the U.S.
Fiat?
No.
Citroën.
I mean, Fiat is here with one model. Right. They have literally the 500X, which you can get with a drop top, I think.
500.
No, the 124 has gone out of production.
Really?
That's my understanding. I was talking to Jordan about this, and he said they don't make the 124 anymore.
I like the 124. I mean, it's the better NASCAR.
It was the nicer Miata.
I
hope I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure that's the case. So I heard there's like a rental only ride sharing thing for the Ami coming, and hope it goes the way of the Nissan branded Twizzies that came in, because there are legal Twizzies in this country from that program, and I really I've been dying to find a way to import one.
Right. So there's a chance that you could possibly get one of these.
I have like all of these search filters to ding and blow up my phone as soon as a Twizy comes up for sale in the US. Because you can't import it. It's technically a car. You can't import it till it's 25 years old. So I was like, how do we get out of spec registered as a, you know, manufacturer in Colorado, and then we can put manufacturer plates on it for reverse engineering and then just swap it out every year with a different one.
No, Noah in the chat says Fiat is no longer in US. This is true.
Yeah, there you go.
Fiat.
So just the really weird 500X thing.
All right. So we should probably end the show. We've done our thing. So join us again next week. We'll hear about the Lexus RZ 450E and see if Tom thinks that's an improvement over the BZ4X. If you have any questions or comments, you can leave them on the Inside EVs forum podcast thread or on our YouTube or Twitch comment sections. If you like the show, please give us a thumbs up if you're watching us on YouTube. Don't forget, you can find and follow our panelists on Twitter. Follow Martin Lee at EV News Daily. Kyle Connor is at It's Kyle Connor. Lacey is at Miss Go Electric. And subscribe to our YouTube channel because it's awesome. And I'm at Dominic_Y. Click subscribe and tap that bell icon for notifications. And we'll see you all again next week. Ciao.